Welcome to Calibrate Conversations, a podcast about embracing God's standard for sexuality. I'm your host, Brady Cohn, and I'm so glad you're here with us. Make sure you like this video, subscribe to our channel, and share with your friends, and go to calibrateministries.com for more resources. We really appreciate it. Well, today, it's just me. I'm going to talk about some things I've been seeing online about marriage. And so some of these have been popping up my feed. Some of them are kind of current events people are talking about. Some of it is just things I found that are interesting that I thought had some good truth. So we're going to title this The Good, The Bad, The Ugly. I'm going to show some video clips and we're going to talk about whether this is a good word or kind of pretty bad or actually really, really ugly. So let's get into it. And I think we will have some fun with it. It's all on marriage. And I think marriage is obviously so important and we need to be talking about it and we need to be bettering ourselves in marriage. And there's a lot that we can learn. And we can learn from people who are doing it well and have some good things to say. And also we can learn what not to do by people who have some pretty ugly things to say. So let's see what some of these people have to say. We're going to start with a good word. We'll start there. That's a good way to start it.
Here's the greatest mistake I made in my marriage. And if you're doing this, man, I beg you to stop now. Never frame your wife. Never put her in a portrait that is negative around your kids and your buddies and your coworkers, especially women. Frame your wife the way you want her to be not only treated, but the way that you want her to become. Watch your marriage change. Follow for more.
Okay, that is a good word. How are you talking about your spouse? We live in a culture where, and this happens within Christian communities too, on how we put down our spouses. We kind of belittle them. We make fun of them. Sometimes I'm with groups of guys, whether it's online or actually in person, it's kind of a contest to see, you know, who has it the worst at home with their wife. And I know that women do the same. I grew up hearing women do that. It's kind of this competition of who has the worst husband and kind of making fun of and demeaning their husbands to each other. I've heard that a lot. And then I hear men do the same. And that is so tragic. We should be honoring our wives. We should be loving them. We should be calling out greatness in them to people. And we can have some serious conversations with, you know, discipleship, relationships about the hardships of marriage, but that should be about how do I apply the gospel to this? How do I love my wife well through this? What's being exposed? How do I take my responsibility for my aspect of what's going on here? It shouldn't be demeaning and making fun of. And I've caught myself, especially the early days of marriage, making some snide comments about my wife, and I had to repent of. And I think sometimes it comes from insecurity. It comes from, you know, with guys kind of wanting to fit in, having something common to talk about. And I guess that's something that's common that we can all relate to. And so we have to be very cautious in honoring them around other people and not demeaning. All right, let's see what we have next. Okay, here is one that is pretty bad. So I might not say ugly. I'll reserve ugly for the a lot of heresy from pastors, but I think that this one is bad.
A few weeks ago, I said I don't do my husband's laundry. And a lot of people are saying, whoa, 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 those are small acts of kindness. Why wouldn't you want to do that for your partner? But here's the thing, small acts of kindness that are mostly domestic labor just add up to work at the end of the day. So here's a list of things that I don't do for my husband. You all know, I don't do his laundry. He can do that himself. I do my laundry and we do the kids' laundry, but he does his own. I don't cook dinner. He cooks dinner every single night. I do breakfast and lunch for us and our kids. I don't pack him a lunch. If he's hungry, he'll figure out what he's going to eat for lunch the same way that I do. I don't make his doctor's appointments because guess what? He's not making mine. Would it be kind of me to do that? For sure. Is it my job? Absolutely not. I want him to be healthy, but he's a grown-ass man and he can book his own appointments, right? There's a lot of things that I don't do for my husband. I don't schedule his haircuts. I don't pack his clothes for vacation, right? I don't do.
Okay, I think we've had enough of her jabbering. The other half of it is pretty much the same. Man, what a horrible take on marriage. Does every marriage mean that she has to do all those things for her husband? Absolutely not. But marriage should be about outserving one another. Like, we go all in on serving and loving and doing what we can to help the other person thrive. And sometimes we get too caught up in gender stereotypes with expectations, and it doesn't need to be that way. Maybe the man is a much better cook, and that's great. He can do a lot of the cooking. Maybe she's better at this and that. You know, when it comes to like finances, there should be common goals and working together as one with finances. But it doesn't matter whether or not she does it day to day or whether he does it day to day, depending on their giftings and abilities. But we should be serving one another. And this video is kind of this feminist take on I'm just going to do the bare minimum because it's beneath me to do these things for a man. And I'm so thankful for a wife that serves me so well. And I attempt to serve her too in different ways. And I'm not always good at it. And we all mess up. But, you know, we should be working to serve one another and not have this rebellion because we've seen the patriarchy, or as they call it, or, you know, overdone gender stereotypes on expectations. No, like, we reject what's bad, we hold on to what's good, and we look to marriage to serve one another deeply and give each other a life that will help them thrive. And my wife does most of my laundry, even though I was kind of capable when I was single. I took all my shirts to the laundromat and had them pressed, and that was very nice. And now that's not in the budget. But my wife does most of my laundry because she's doing the kids' laundry, and she does more of the household things because she's home during the day with the kids, and she works so hard there. I do most of the outside things, and we just have different roles, and we can figure those out based on our giftings and abilities and the capacities we have and what we can do to serve one another. So don't be like this lady. This is a pretty bad take on marriage. At Calibrate Ministries, we have an entire ministry just for parents of LGBTQ kids, because we want to be able to shepherd your hearts and encourage you and pray for you and your family as you navigate these situations. So just go to calibrateministries.com and fill out the contact form, and I'd love to be in touch with you about how you can be involved in that ministry. All right. What do we have next? Up next, we have what I would consider a pretty ugly take on marriage. And so because this is coming from a pastor, I'm definitely going to rate it as ugly, because he, of all people, should know better. I've seen this going around a lot in the last week on social media. It's a pastor, Joel, like, Weblow. I think I'd never heard of him. It's probably a good thing. I kind of hate to even give him the clicks, but we're going to see what he has to say when it comes to what his wife is reading.
There are certain books that I've just had to say, hey, I don't know if this is a bad book, but I don't have time to read it. And so you're not going to read it either. We'll read it together. I remember recently my wife had a book and I saw her reading it on the couch, and it was about paedobaptism. And I said, no, we're not doing that yet. We will become paedobaptist when I'm ready. But my wife's not going to be a paedobaptist for 3 years before I am. And I don't have time to read it right now. I know the arguments will be great. I will agree and disagree. I'm not sure which arguments are better. But for the time being, this is what I'm persuaded of. And you're not going to outpace me.
Okay, that is a horribly cringy take. And so not letting his wife read books that he can't read because he doesn't want her to outpace him theologically. And there's so much that can be said of this, I think. And looking at other videos that he's made, I really hate to even give out his name because I want to add to his clicks and raise awareness of him. But he seems to have some pretty horrible takes. I don't think this was just a one-off mistake. But this is a domineering, I would say, emotionally abusive husband who has bought into this red pill manhood, kind of this Doug Wilson-esque take control and exercise dominion over your wife. And that is absolutely abusive. That's not what men are called to do in marriages. That's not complementarianism, even though I think complementarianism has gotten the blame for a lot of that. That's just outright abuse, and it's absolutely tragic. My wife is a reader. My wife reads way more than I do. And I'm so thankful because she's so smart and she's so diligent and she uses her time well. She'll be on her phone reading a book at all times while I am scrolling through social media, wasting time. I'm so thankful that she is a avid reader. And there is something to be said that if we're working through theological things, we do it together, right? Like, and so if she was reading a theological book and really questioning and pondering and, you know, like, that's great for us to talk about it. It might be great at some point to read the book and know what she's talking about. Otherwise, we can just at least discuss it and make sure we're at a good place and we're on the same track, you know, spiritually. Recently, I've been on a binge of Leighton Flowers, who has Soteriology 101. And so I've been on this binge of Provisionism, which is kind of an alternative to Calvinism or Arminianism, and all about soteriology. And I've loved it. And so, you know, I've played some clips for my wife and we've listened in the car some, and I've talked to her about what I'm learning. And so I don't expect her to watch everything I'm watching. But if we're growing and understanding something spiritually, we should be talking about it. But preventing our wife from reading a book until we've read it ourselves and not wanting her to outpace us, that is absolutely taking male headship or leadership to a place it should never be. And we shouldn't buy into that form of kind of red pill, is what they're calling it now, masculinity. And red pill masculinity is outside Christianity too. It's like kind of this very domineering, chauvinistic type of masculinity. Because I think that guys are really craving masculinity because they've been so demasculated over the years. But then a lot of Christians are buying into that type of red pill Christianity. And you see it with Doug Wilson, who has some major, major issues, and guys like this. And they're taking this domineering, chauvinistic attitude towards their wife, and they're slapping a Christian label on it and they're calling it leadership. And I'm here to tell you, it is absolutely not good quality Christian leadership. So I'm going to label that as an ugly take. All right. I think that this next one is actually a pretty ugly take too. So this is a pastor. He is a worship pastor at J.D. Greer's church. This is a big church. And I think that's what happens when we put people in pastoral positions because of their talents and abilities and not because of their spiritual maturity. So let's take a look at this. So he's talking about when he was engaged, before he was married. He's talking about physical relationship.
Girls are just female friends. Like that, right. That kind of that should change when you become married. So I don't think it necessarily, I don't think sex before marriage interfere with that. If anything, you know, for me and her, and I hope if when she watched this, she don't try to kill me, think I'm telling our business, but I'm sorry, baby. I'm not telling our business details. I'm just right. saying, but, I think if anything, it helped both of us be like, I mean, we know what we're getting into, you know, right. We knew what we was getting into from a physical standpoint, right. And our attraction, you know, with each other, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? To this day.
Okay. This is absolutely horrible. So this guy earlier in the video was talking about him as wife had sex before marriage, and now he's justifying and saying, well, at least we knew what we were getting into, at least physically. And what a absolutely horrible, ugly take on marriage and how we've just undervalued the sanctity of marriage. And many times, like I say at churches, we blame the homosexual community for ruining the sanctity of marriage. Well, actually, guys like this in the church have done a pretty good job of that. And so he's talking about how he had sex, he was having sex before marriage, and it was okay because at least they knew what they're getting into physically. It's like, no, like, what if you didn't like what you're happening physically. So now you're just going to break up with her and leave, you know, her being, I don't want to say the word defiled, and both of you having been tarnished sexually, physically, and having sinned against a holy God. And now you went into that marriage with that baggage. And like, and just because you got married doesn't mean that it was, you know, no longer sinful. It's like, man, these guys have sin they need to repent of, especially with him being a pastor. You don't have sex before marriage just so you could know what you're getting into physically. That's absolutely atrocious. You get married and then you figure out the physical part together. And sometimes it's hard. Sometimes it's difficult. We were talking to some friends the other day. It's like, man, like there's so many couples who don't have sex on their wedding night. And that's completely okay, because sometimes it's difficult to figure out, especially when you've never done this before and there's all kinds of emotions and you need to connect emotionally first. And that should come after you've made this commitment and vows before God of marriage. And so we get this sexual aspect so wrong, and we look to intimacy before marriage in so many ways. And it's absolutely wrong. And for a pastor to be just minimalizing it like that and even endorsing it, like at least they know what they're getting into. Like, no, you make the commitment and then you get into it. And then you work through it together, and you love one another through the ups and downs of the physical aspect of marriage. So I'm going to label that as a very ugly take. All right, let's see what we got here. Here is a lady, and she has some wise words. So I'm going to label this as actually a pretty good one. She has some good words to share.
Reason why so many Christian couples get married so soon is because, you know, when you're not engaging in sexual activities, you have those real raw conversations. You talk about the serious stuff. Do you want kids? What is God's purpose for your life? And it's almost like speed dating, in a sense where it's like, okay, we don't align. Cool. No feelings hurt. We weren't engaging in sexual activities, being intimate. We're not attached to each other, and we can move forward. So it's kind of a beautiful thing. When you really think about it, you know, holy, you know, desiring to be holy and having a God honoring marriage, you know, it starts with the intentionality.
Okay, that's great. And I think that the key word there is intentionality. And so many times it seems like Christian couples have pretty short dating and engagement. My wife and I, we had a pretty long dating, and some of that was, you know, circumstances. You know, I knew from the first date that I wanted to marry her and she'd make a wonderful wife. It took 2 years to convince her of that, but I'm glad I finally did. But some of that was circumstances. We're living in different states. My house had burned down, so I was trying to get that rebuilt. I had lots of things to just settle in life and you know, to be able to move forward in marriage. But then once we were engaged, we had a very quick engagement, and that I definitely believe in, because once you're engaged, you've made that commitment, and so there's no point in waiting. Just hurry up and get done and get married and get started in building this life together with Christ. And so intentionality, why are you dating? And then get those big questions out of the way right away. And when you have the gospel in mind, you should be having a gospel visioned, you know, purpose of marriage, of how are we going to help each other thrive? How are we going to be a part of each other's sanctification? How can we do work for the kingdom of God together as a married couple? What's our vision for a Christian family? And we're not going to agree on every detail of those, and that's completely fine. And some of those details are going to change as we grow and as we mature and we work through those things. But we should have a similar vision and faith in God and understanding of the gospel, and we should not date for the fun of it. We should date with intentionality of finding the helpmate for our life and the person who can come alongside us. And so we need to make sure that we're intentional, that we are dating for the right reasons, that we are being honest from the beginning. It was kind of funny. A lot of people ask me, with my background with homosexuality, like, when did you tell your wife when you're dating? Like, how long did it take you to tell her about your past? And, you know, Mayor and I got set up on a blind date. And so we went on our first date. It was quick little lunch date, and then we text each other afterwards, said we had a nice time and we should do it again. And so we did. So we went on a second date. I picked her up in my Jeep without the top on it, and I thought it was really cool. And we went down on a walk, and she said, "So I found your testimony online, and I have a lot of questions." And I don't blame her for having a lot of questions. I would too. And so it was really good for us to get that out of the way so quickly, because we can't move forward in dating one another well with intentionality towards marriage if we're holding these secrets back and we don't know one another deeply. And so for me, I was really thankful that the aspect of my past with sexuality came out to the forefront after the first date. We're able to talk about it, have it out in the open, and that just helped us move forward with peace. But so many times I see people dating and they're keeping these big secrets, and they have these big parts of them that they're not sharing. And I'll say, when we have a sinful past, we don't need to share the gory details. But the purpose of dating should be to move towards marriage. And so we need to be getting to know each other deeply so that we can trust one another and that we can commit to one another and rely on one another. And then that should lead towards healthy desire for intimacy. And so we need to be much more honest. We need to know the vision that God has for us in our life. And we need discipleship leading up to engagement and marriage to help us figure that out so that we're not wasting each other's time and just dating for the fun of it and wondering if we're compatible. No two people are compatible because we're all sinners. And so once you make that commitment, if the gospel is the center of it and you die to yourself to love your spouse, then God will work the rest out and you can have a glorious, wonderful marriage, regardless of how big of sinners you are, because there is beauty in forgiveness and grace and dying to self to love one another. Okay, what do we have next? This next one, I'm going to label this as a good one. I really like what this dude had to say.
Hard for your marriage. And let me tell you, on the other side of the sacrifice is going to be the most meaningful fulfillment you'll ever experience. It may take you 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, but at the other side of that, even in the darkest moments of a marriage where I'm not attracted, I'm not satisfied, I'm frustrated, I'm sexually frustrated, I'm emotionally frustrated, I've been cheated on, against, even in moments where you have biblical grounds for divorce, on the other side of that sacrifice is beautiful fulfillment and redemption. Ask for—
Absolutely. We fight for our marriages. They're hard. They're difficult. We see marriages that absolutely fall apart. Sometimes there's adultery. There's all kinds of issues. There's frustrations. We fight for them. And on the other side is beauty, because God's grace is so prevalent. And so many times I've seen marriages come back from adultery and all kinds of issues stronger and better because there's such a depth that they've never experienced before. Not that we want those things to happen, but marriage is going to be hard. And we see people walk away from their marriages all the time because, oh, I'm not happy anymore. Or I don't love this person. I hate when they say that. Oh, I'm just not in love with him. Well, guess what? Love is a choice. Love is not a feeling. And so you're not in love with someone. You choose to love them. And then studies actually show that when you choose to serve someone and lay down your life for them, feelings of affection develop for them. And that really follows the relational attachment model that I teach a lot on. We need to develop a deep knowledge of one another, trust one another, reliance and commitment, and then desire for intimacy follows. And so we don't pursue relationships based on how they make us feel. And then we don't stay in marriages based on how they make us feel, because feelings change. And sometimes those feelings are based on my own sin and other person's actions. And we remain committed. And that is a beautiful, wonderful aspect of the covenant of marriage. I have pastors and church leaders regularly reach out to me about speaking at their churches and events. If that's something you would be interested in, feel free to go to calibrateministries.com and fill out the contact form, and I'd love to talk to you about what that would look like. Okay, let's take a look at what we have next.
Is not just designed to make you happy, It's designed to make you holy. Why? Because God uses the marriage covenant to make you more and more like Jesus. See, if you're going to continue to stay in this relationship, this marriage, guess what? It requires me to become more forgiving. It requires me to become more committed. It requires me to become more patient. It requires me to become more kind. It requires me to become more humble. And guess what? My ego has to die. My pride has to die. Every time I say I'm sorry and I apologize to protect the covenant, the relationship between my wife, I'm becoming more and more like Jesus. Marriage will change you and make and turn you into a better version of you, better than any type of relationship in this world.
Okay, that is a great word. Marriage helps kill our ego, our pride. We have to practice commitment and grace and love towards one another. So I absolutely love that. Marriage helps sanctify us. It reveals the worst of us and gives us an opportunity to model grace to our spouse and for them to model grace to us. I will say, though, that you know, as marriage reveals the hard aspects of our heart, the selfishness, we shouldn't wait until marriage to let those aspects be revealed. That's part of discipleship. And so, you know, when I was single, I was very intentional about living with other people. And some of that selfishness was revealed, not nearly to the same level, because there's not the level of commitment, and there's not the level of, you know, intimacy and digging into each other's lives and living life together. It's never going to be at that level when you're not married, but I was still intentional about living with people, and it exposed a lot of selfishness. It exposed pride and ego, and it causes you to have to die to yourself. And those are practices we should be putting in place at all stages of life, whether we're married or not. And so I see sometimes a 25-year-old guy who gets married and first few years of marriage are kind of a disaster. And it's like, he would have been so much better served to have committed to people and died to himself to love people and been in uncomfortable places relationally long before marriage so that he could experience some sanctification before he got to marriage. Many times I meet a single person, they're like, oh no, I could never have a roommate. Another person living in my house would drive me nuts. Like, well, you're the type of person who you need a roommate because you need someone to drive you nuts and expose what's going on in your heart. And you need to learn to die to yourself to love this person, even when it's uncomfortable. And so we need to practice doing that before we get married. And we also need that because not everyone's going to get married. And so I don't want to ever make it sound like marriage is the only path to sanctification. And if someone is single their entire life, whether it's because for whatever reason they can't get married, there's lots of reasons, or they never find the right person, or maybe they get married and their spouse dies. Like, you can still be sanctified. You can still go down this road of deep commitment with people and people exposing what's going on in your heart and you being able to surrender that to the Lord. And so marriage intensifies that. It's like a pressure cooker to where it's so much more intense, but we can still, and we should have it outside of marriage, both before we're married, then if our marriage ends for whatever reason after we're married, because that's part of living in relationship with people, with fellow believers and with non-believers, and letting our rough edges be exposed and letting our selfishness be exposed so that God can truly change our hearts and give us a different heart. All right. Well, so I'm going to label that as a good word, but also hopefully expanded that a little bit for some better context on how we can apply that. All right. I'm going to end with something that might get me a little bit in trouble with my wife. It's kind of funny. And so we'll end with a little bit of a laugh.
Mary, you're a guy. You get a little helper in the car. I love my little helper in the car. She knows everything about driving. It's very convenient for me.
but sometimes I get confused. See, I don't know how I get anywhere without my helper in the car. I'd probably be bouncing off trees and buildings and stuff, but she's there to help. Like, she tells me when the light changes colors and everything. It's very convenient and helpful.
All right. That is pretty funny. I believe that that's Tim Hawkins, and he has some great stuff. And so I will say, with my wife being a backseat driver, I've never been in an accident while she's been in the car. And I have been in accidents, some of them my fault, while she hasn't been in the car. So maybe I need her as my helper to tell me that the light has turned green and to tell me that there's something going on ahead. And so that's God's grace in our life right there. So Mary, if you're watching this, I love you and thank you for being such a great helper in life. All right, guys, I hope that you got some good laughs and some good encouragement on marriage tonight. We all need to be equipped, whether we're married or not, to have a proper understanding of marriage there. And we also need to have a proper understanding of singleness and the right theology of that. And when we see some of these things online, we need to know how to put it in the appropriate context: good, bad, ugly, true or not true. And so many times we're swayed by things that have a Christian label on them. We're swayed by things that look good on the outside, some of these Christian movements that are really unhealthy and steeped in unhealthy behavior. So we have to discern, and we have to go to the Lord. We have to look at God's word and figure out what's true, what's not true. How is something good being distorted? And marriage is so great, and the enemy wants nothing more than to distort it in small ways that leads to big destruction in marriage. All right. Thank you for joining us. Make sure you check out CalvaryMinistry.com. We appreciate your support of the ministry if you're able to do that, and we will see you next week.